Maggie Timoney is the CEO of Heineken USA. A native of Ireland, Timoney immigrated to the United States to attend New York's Iona College on a basketball scholarship, where she later earned her MBA. Timoney joined Heineken in 1998, where she rose through the ranks, holding executive positions across Europe before landing the job as Heineken's first female U.S. CEO. In this episode of Influencers, Maggie Timoney joins me as we discuss the business of beer and her rise to the top of a male-dominated industry. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Influencers. I'm Andy Serwer, and welcome to our guest, Maggie Timoney, who is the Heineken USA CEO. Maggie, great to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
So talk to us about Heineken USA. How big is the business, and what is the relationship between Heineken USA and the parent company in Europe?
Yeah, we have circa 4% market share in the U.S., so our Heineken name is a big name. And when I tell people that, sometimes they think, wow, I thought it would be much bigger, because Heineken brand is such an international brand and in almost every country in the world. Our relationship with Amsterdam, and my boss sits in Miami. He's the president of the Americas, and the global CEO, Dolf van den Brink, used to run Heineken USA. So on one end, the relationship obviously is very strong because we're very close and we know each other. And even though we're the second largest brewer in the world, Andy, it feels like a family. So even though we have circa also 90,000 employees, it still feels more of a family. And every operating company globally, we operate autonomously, but obviously linked to the strategic framework from Amsterdam.
There's so many brands of beer, and a lot of them are now owned by the giant companies. And we'll talk about your brand specifically, Maggie. But can you also talk to us a little bit about the other big beer companies? Give us the landscape of the competitive set, if you will.
Yeah, well, I don't like to talk too much about my competition, but I also like to learn from the competition. Of course, ABI InBev is number one brewer in the world. We're number two. Molson Coors or Miller Coors is number three, and so on. And, you know, we have a healthy respect for our competitors, and our competitors do some really great things. But we also, you know, we forge our own path. We are majority owned by the Heineken family. Charlene Heineken was Freddie's daughter. And we balance what we need to do in the short term, but also what we need to do for the long term, because we want to be around again another 165 years.
Right. That ownership is probably a key differentiator, I think. That's right. So you do have these other brands, though, like Red Stripe and Dos Equis and Amstel, as well as some ciders and even some cannabis-infused drinks maybe we can talk about. What are the particular traits of the U.S. market, Maggie, and how do you adapt with certain products and maybe not with others? What's your thinking there?
Well, I think if you think about the pandemic, right, the pandemic has accelerated trends. People talk about the lines are blurred across categories for consumers. But I think if we're honest, there are no, think about yourself, Andy, and what you drink or how you choose your products. There are no lines anymore. Consumers go from wine to spirits to beer to seltzers. And in the U.S. for us, in particular, with our core brands, Heineken, and we line extended into Heineken 00 almost 3 years ago. That continues with, we doubled the brand from 2019 to 20. We're high double-digit growth again this year. And then you look at our Dos Equis portfolio. Lager's doing great. We've line extended into ranch water, lime and salt. I don't know if you've ever been to Texas, but do you want your beer dressed or not dressed? So a very simple lime and salt. Let's put it in the beer, and it's doing extraordinarily well. Flavored beers are doing well. We did our partnership with Hornell Beverages, with Arizona Sunrise, to bring a seltzer that has real juice in there. So we're moving from a beer company or a lager company in the United States into more of a beverage company, meeting consumers' needs as they exist today, but also looking at how do we meet unmet needs that consumers don't even realize they have.
Maggie, that sounds wonderful. On the other hand, I got a feel for you guys and anyone in this business, because there's this insatiable demand, as you say, for new things, and you're always creating new SKUs. But I wonder, you know, how does that, does it hurt the business, help the business? It must be challenging, right?
Well, it's challenging because, you know, I always say when we have our meetings and we're talking about our innovation rate and what our new and next is, what impact does that have on our breweries that produce our products? Because they can't, we have to be efficient and effective. So some things we have to really make choices and just say no to, because it's just too much of an impact on our production facilities. While at the same time, we need some small batch things in order to test and learn. Because I think some of the biggest mistakes that's made with innovation is you fire a big cannonball out without first calibrating some smaller tests to make sure that it's sustainable and that it's feasible. So we're more in the test and learn mode, but quickly we need to have speed, because we also want to make sure that once we know that something is working, that we scale fast. And we have some key measures of success in our test markets. And in particular, of course, and the rate of sale is very important. But again, Sorry, all grounded in consumer insight.
Right. Those trade-offs are fascinating and must make the work, you know, very interesting that way. You mentioned COVID-19 and a pandemic. Surveys showed that many increased their alcohol consumption during this time. How did that demand play out for your products, and was it a challenge to meet?
It was definitely a challenge to meet. The pandemic, you know, pandemic and pivot. I think about those two P's. We had to pivot, you know, fairly quickly. Our breweries in Mexico, beer was deemed non-essential by the Mexican government. They were shut down. So we had to pivot fairly quickly and temporarily produce Dos Equis and Tecate in the Netherlands. On-premise was closed down. So, you know yourself, you were buying everything and bringing it home and consuming at home. So then we had to make a decision. Hey, let's put Dos Equis lager in a 5-liter keg. I don't know if you know our little 5-liter keg, so people can enjoy draft beer at home. So, Andy, it threw up a lot of challenges. And probably this, I mean, it was scary. I mean, think about yourself. It's scary. But we had to also increase our tolerance for ambiguity, make sure our people were safe, but also capitalize on opportunity that was there. And we did that very well as a company in 2020.
I love those little baby kegs. Is that what you're talking about?
Baby keg, yeah. Well, yeah, the 5-liter. Yeah, we have Heineken and we have Dos Equis. Yeah.
Right.
That's wouldn't necessarily call it a baby.
Well, I said it, not you. I'm not putting words in.
And isn't the quality phenomenal, Andy? The quality of the 5-liter keg. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. Okay, so where do things stand now, though, Maggie, that we're sort of getting back to normal a little bit? You know, bars and restaurants are open. How do you think about the outlook as that's going on? And it's in some ways in the US, but not in others.
Yeah, I think we're confident in the outlook. We have to stay ahead of the consumer in the US, all suppliers, number one. Number two, on-premise is opening up, but it hasn't come back, obviously, to where it was, because a lot of these businesses could not make it. And number three, I think fostering connections with our own employees, physical connections, is really, really important, so long as you can do it safely. And number four, there's a pandemic, but you still have a business to run. So how do you balance the people agenda, your innovation agenda, and your core business agenda while meeting the needs of delivering the revenue and the profits, and also meeting the needs of your own employees who want to feel safe, who want to work for a company that cares about them, but who is also successful. So it's a melting pot of putting all those things together, and it's not or, you have to do it all.
Right. You talked about the new brands and beers and hybrids that you guys are doing, but what about the name brands like Heineken itself? How do you keep that brand, that flagship brand, relevant?
Well, you need to, first of all, ensure that you keep it premium. I mean, think about it, you know, your business under pressure because of COVID. You know, you want to keep your price where it is. You want to keep investing behind your brand. You want to keep your advertising, your ATL, BTL high, to ensure that even though it was a lot of ambiguity and where was last year going to go, make sure you invest behind your core brand. Also ensure that you're innovating on that brand. And not just, you know, people always, I find people most often default, and you see our Heineken 00 here, default to what? A product, but also how you do things. So we had a big issue last year, because this is last year was the second year for Heineken 00, and sampling is really, really important. I'm not sure if you'd had it, Andy. This is a great zero alcohol beer. But how do you sample during COVID? So we pivoted, and we did, for example, and this is where innovation comes in, not only in what you do, but how you do it, is we sampled Heineken 00 at Tribeca, where they had pop-up movies, and you give a six-pack for free. So really trying to pivot quickly, because you don't have a lot of time, to ensure that you're still getting sour grape brands in the hands of consumers.
So you're drinking a 00 during this interview. I wish I had. I mean, that looks fantastic.
Send me your address and I'll send you some.
Deal.
Deal. This is a great product.
That's great. And you can drink those at work, right?
Zero alcohol, 69 calories.
Love it. Okay.
Hashtag now you can.
Right. Yeah. We're going to stock those in our work fridge. So there's also this challenge from trends in healthy eating and living. And you guys have this 00 and some light beer. But how do you assess you're addressing people who want to take care of health and wellness with beer? Right. So there's this big macro trend of people wanting being healthier, and beer is perceived as
better for you.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you address that?
Well, first of all, perception versus reality, right? And for us as a company, we want it to be real, not just saying it's healthy for you and consumers being fooled or thinking it's better for you, right? Heineken 00, zero alcohol, 69 calories. Arizona Sunrise, 100 calories, real juice. So when you pour an Arizona Sunrise, if it's cherry punch, it has a color because there's real juice in it. So listening to consumers and ensuring that we're delivering quality products in the way they want them, in the right occasion, and also making sure, and we have some products that I can't talk about right now, that will really tap into that whole health and wellness and moderation category. So there'll be zero alcohol flavors, low alcohol, and not just beer.
So you have some things on the drawing board, in other words.
Yes, that I can't talk about.
Okay, well, we'll be watching that. Let's talk about hard seltzer. You know, this has been a real hot topic. It was streaking to the moon. You've got a bit of a pullback now, of course, that we've seen in this space. You guys are in this business as well. Where do things stand? Is it a threat to the core beer business? How have sales of your hard seltzer product been going, et cetera?
Well, we're 5 months in the market with Arizona Sunrise, so we're continuously building distribution. So it's going well. The category has slowed down, but I think people just need to realize also that you're going off 2020 numbers. And, you know, panic buying, hoard, you know, pantry loading. Seltzer is still circa 7% of beer. That's quite large. And it's still growing, even though not at the rates of last year, because, again, 2020 is difficult, I think, to plan versus 2020, because, again, there's a lot of ambiguity. But, you know, it taps into that moderation, or that health and wellness, I should say, not moderation, health and wellness space. And, I think it's going to be around for some time.
Right. And what is your brand? It's the Arizona brand that you were just talking
Arizona
about? Arizona Sunrise, right. Got it. Okay. Another hot category is cannabis-infused drinks. My understanding that Lagunitas, a subsidiary of yours, came out with one a few years ago. Where does that stand, and how are sales of that doing?
Yeah, I can't talk to Lagunitas specifically. That's a sister company to ours in the US and doesn't report into me. So I can't really answer that right now.
Okay. Would you ever consider having a marijuana infused Heineken?
I think we're open to different products. I'm not sure yet on Heineken, the brand.
Yeah.
No.
Interesting.
Sorry. Yeah. That you meant Heineken, the company. Heineken.
Well, I mean, I guess both. So Heineken, the company, you'd be open to thinking about it, but Heineken, the brand, not at this point.
Oh, I mean, listen, consumers have needs. We want to meet those needs, so long as it in a sustainable and responsible way.
Got it. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about your employees and what's going on with the workforce in the United States for Heineken. Are your employees still working remotely? Do you have set plans for returning to the office?
Yeah, we have a combination of, we have a lot of people out in the field. So they're out and about working with our distributors and our retailers. Our main office in White Plains opens mid-October on a voluntary basis to see how we manage and ensure we keep everyone safe because of the Delta variant. That's thrown another spanner in the work. So we're just making sure we can keep people safe because put safety first is our number one behavior for Heineken USA and globally. We've managed to do a really good job of delivering during 2020 and 21 whilst we work behind our computers from home. But at the end of the day, you know, our business, it's a social business. Our culture is, the touch points and the relationships with people are really important. And, you know, I think Simon Sinek said it, music happens between the notes. So you miss those, people say, water cooler moments or getting a coffee. I'm sure you just miss them, Andy. You get a lot more done sometimes when you meet someone and say, hey, I just want to talk to you about this one thing. And those interactions, you can't put a price on.
And let me ask you, Maggie, I'm sorry for the ignorant question, maybe. So is Heineken brewed and bottled in the United States or where does it come from? Where does a Heineken come from in America?
All of our Heineken is imported from the Netherlands.
I see. Okay. And is it imported in bulk or in bottles?
You mean in cans, bottles, kegs?
Yeah. So it's all three of those things. So you send kegs from Holland, you send bottles from Holland, you send cans from Holland.
Everything, 100%. We are 100% imported from the Netherlands.
So the obvious question is, have you ever thought, I'm sure you have, why would you not build a brewery in the United States? Doesn't make sense.
And you know this, Andy, the United States is a big country. And our brand, even though our share, it might be smaller than you'd think for Heineken brand in the US, just logistically getting all of that beer from one brewery or two breweries around the US would be also very costly. So of course we think about it, we look at it every so often, but we have a very efficient supply chain end to end from our breweries in the Netherlands all the way to our demand points in the US, of which we have 9, and then out to our distributors.
And does the beer have to stay cold when it's being shipped across the Atlantic?
No.
Doesn't have to. Because it's pasteurized, I guess that's right. Got it. Okay, let me ask you, so to-go alcohol became legal in many places during the lockdown and will stick around in about 20 states. So what do you think about that? Is that a good thing?
I think it's a good thing because it gives consumers another option instead of, I mean, I want the on-premise to come back. But there's another vertical of to-go for food and beer. And believe it or not, in Texas, many of the restaurants who are doing food and alcohol to go are selling a lot of the 5-liter Dos Equis lager. Because Dos Equis is really, it's big in Texas. It's a loved brand in Texas. And now they're getting their draft beer at home with their meal as a package deal. So I think it's a good thing. But again, we need on-premise to come back, not only for our business, but also for the social fabric of our communities.
Right. I mean, in this new trend that we were just talking about may blur the answer to this question, but what was the breakdown roughly, and maybe it's different for different brands, between on-premise consumption and consuming at home?
Oh, on-premise consumption, I don't know that answer. I know off-premise is 80, on-premise is 20 on average. And then you mean consuming at home?
Right, but so the off-premise would be people.
80,
Yeah, that
80%.
so that's 80. So in other words, that's people going and buying Heineken and Dos Equis and taking it home. That's 80, and then
Yeah, and
20%.
industry-wide, it's basically 80-20, except when it goes for craft beers. Craft beers are consumed more in bars
Oh, that's fascinating.
because of the draft, right? People like
Right.
draft craft.
Right. Got it. Okay. So you're a woman CEO in a male-dominated industry that's thought to serve a predominantly male customer base. What is it like being a woman in this business? And do changes need to be made to make it easier for other women to succeed in the beer business?
It's great being a woman in this business. I want to just say that. I worked for Gallo, I worked for Anheuser-Busch Wholesaler, I worked for Heineken now for the past 23 years in many different capacities in many different countries. This is an unbelievable industry. But what we don't do, Andy, is we don't really market the industry as a place to work. We market brands. You think Heineken USA, the first thing that comes into your mind is brand Heineken. You think Miller Coors, what comes into it's brands. So we just came out, we took a leadership position with our program Behind the Label. And Behind the Label is a platform that we're using as taking leadership with the industry to showcase the people, the processes, the passion behind our industry. And our first chapter, and there'll be many more chapters, is on gender, because we want to attract and win the war on talent and get the best people into our industry. Not just into Heineken USA, but rising above that and getting the best people in, male or female, but the first chapter is on gender.
Well, let me skipping around here. Let me just ask you, Sam Adams just put out a beer with an alcohol content of 28%, and it's so high that it's been banned in 15 states. Any reaction to that? Would you ever put out a beer with an alcohol content like that?
No, absolutely not.
Why not?
I mean, think about our we have there's a beautiful side of our industry, but there's also the side where people imbibe too much or they have a disease where they can't stop drinking, they become alcoholics. I'm from Ireland. Binge drinking, you think about UK, Ireland, binge, I've grown up with you see the dark side of alcohol. We every year for the past, God, 10, 15 years, 10% of our media dollars goes towards responsible consumption. So we would never do an ABV that high. Because
Interesting.
we have a responsibility to ensuring that our products are, it's uncool to be drunk. It's uncool to be drunk. And if we sell less beer, but we make an impact on alcohol misuse, we can put our heads on our pillows at night easily.
We were talking earlier a little bit about this Washington football team quarterback, Taylor Heinicke, and he recently signed a beer endorsement deal, I guess, with Bud Light and not Heineken. Do you have any regrets about that?
No, and we wish him all the best in his career. No regrets. It does sound like Heineken, though. You were right, Andy. We were chatting before we went on camera.
Right. Let's talk about you a little bit, Maggie. You, as you said, were born and raised in Ireland and came to the US for college at Iona, which is outside of New York City. How do you think that early life experience elsewhere shaped your business approach here in the United States?
And we're all shaped by our childhood, right? So youngest of four, growing up in a small town in the west of Ireland. And yeah, never, I've never looked at differently if I was playing football in the street with the boys or the girls or basketball, because that's how I ended up at Iona College in New Rochelle, New York. But I think my childhood and playing sports, I played for the Irish national team. That's a lot. I'd have to have a beer with you and explain that whole story about how I ended up getting a Division I scholarship for
Well, give us the
basketball.
short version of that because I'm interested. You were one of the best basketball players to ever play at Iona. And so that must have been an incredible experience. How did you get to be playing basketball growing up, and what was that like?
Yeah, I was very fortunate because our town is quite small, 12 to 15,000 people, maybe 15 now in Ballina, County Mayo. I was just fortunate that this, through Guinness, a guy got transferred from Dublin to a small town in Ballina and set up a basketball team, Danny Thompson. I would not be here today if it wasn't for Danny Thompson. So if he sees this, a big hi to him and Pauline. And he set up a team, and I was horrible. I started 13 basketball, and I was terrible. But, you know, I persevered, and all of a sudden my shot came on, and then played for the Irish national team, ended up playing over here on tours a couple of weeks every November, and colleges, universities saw me and reached out to the Irish Basketball Association and offered me scholarship.
Wow.
Multiple scholarships, and I chose Iona.
Right. Hey, have you guys thought about there's going to be college athletes can receive endorsement money from anywhere? That's all changing. Have you guys thought about endorsing college athletes at Heineken?
No, because these college athletes are also under 21, and we're also mindful of ensuring that we're always doing the right thing, irrespective of if it's more volume or not.
So as you said, you've been in the business for a while, Maggie, more than 25 years? What's the most significant change you've seen in the business or in drinking culture over those 2.5 decades?
I think two things. One, that promiscuity is probably the wrong word, but the promiscuity of consumers to try all different types of beverages. Because, you know, growing up, you know, you were a beer drinker, you were a vodka drinker, but now that's all changed. And then obviously, I think digital media, social media, and just how fast trends accelerate. And I think that whole moderation, health, wellness is a big trend that maybe, you know, 15 years ago we wouldn't have thought. But, you know, those two things are big changes, because I think about consumers and lines being blurred. And then you think about the world and you think about geographies, but there are no lines geographically anymore. The world is one place and it's not that big anymore.
All right, let me ask you a really tough question, Maggie, which I'm sure you don't want to answer.
I may not answer.
No, I'm going to ask you this. What do you, when you kick back and relax, what's your drink of choice?
Heineken Original.
Okay. Right.
I love it. I'm from Ireland. I love beer. And it's funny, you said before, you know, you market to men and men predominantly drink beer. But there's a lot of women who love beer too. We just need to tap into that market and maybe give them something with a little bit of a lager spin, whether it be a flavor or lime and salt, which I recommend you try, Dos Equis lime and salt. We just need to make products that appeal to the female palate. I grew up in Ireland, so I love beer.
As a beer CEO, do you ever drink wine or vodka? Be honest.
No, of course. I mean, I drink... Of course I have a glass of wine. I don't drink vodka. I'm not really a spirits drinker. I'm a beer and then a glass of wine with maybe a glass of red with steak now and again.
Got it. And final question, Maggie. So what would you like your legacy to be?
In life or in Heineken USA?
Both.
Both. Well, A, I want the company... When I step down from this role, whenever that will be, I want this company to be in a strong place where we're gaining market share, over-delivering and producing beverages that for our consumers in this great country, number one. And number two, I hope that I can shine a light on the path for other young women and men that can, earlier in their career, get chances taken on them so that they can progress and do great things, because I think, and hopefully I live by this, that take chances on people who figure it out. You know, we put a lot of stock into, oh well, he or she doesn't have this and they've never done that. Like, people are smart, they'll figure it out, and if they don't figure it out, what's the worst that can happen? It's a two-way door. They'll go on and do something else and you'll hire someone else. So that's what I'd love my legacy to be, is that path is free from all of the brambles and the, you know, the bushes. It's the clear path for people to see how they can now take on the next stage of my legacy.
Some great thinking there. Maggie Timoney, Heineken USA CEO, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Andy. A pleasure.
You've been watching Influencers. I'm Andy Serwer. We'll see you next time.